Welcome to Managing Safety, brought to you by the FAA Production Studios, a joint effort of the National Aviation Safety Foundation and the FAA Safety Team, the FAST Team. This talk show addresses strategies for thinking in today's complex aviation world. Now, here's Rich Tillery, Chief Pilot for Airline Transport Professionals and FAST Team Lead Representative from Jacksonville, Florida, who is today's host.
Hello, everyone. I'm Rich Tillery, and right now we're on the roof of the FAST Team National Resource Center and home of the FAA Production Studios here in Lakeland Linda Regional Airport. I hope you all have a great time, and welcome to Sun and Fun 2011. My guest today is Bruce Landsberg. Bruce is with AOPA's Aviation Safety Foundation, I take it?
Well, actually, it's changed a little bit in the last year, Rich. We are now the AOPA Foundation, and the Air Safety Foundation, which everybody has come to know and love, and I've led for the past 19 years, has now changed its name to the Air Safety Institute, and it lives beneath the AOPA Foundation. And it does all the same wonderful things that you've come to know and love us for in terms of lots of free safety seminars and online courses and all of the publications and things that we do. But the mission of the AOPA Foundation has been broadened out a little bit, and last year we combined the two organizations. The things that are critical for us right now are, of course, safety is at the top of the list, but right up there with safety is improving general aviation's image, which I think we could stand to have buffed up here and there a little bit, particularly amongst the non-participants. Preserving airports. Without airports, we don't have a place to practice
right.
Our trade.
Exactly.
And airports, we're losing on average about one airport every other week in this country.
Wow, that's incredible.
And once an airport is gone, it never comes back. AOPA set in place about a decade ago the Airport Support Network, and that's critical, and the foundation is working to help support that. The last area is in growing the pilot population, and as you know, the pilot population has been shrinking a little bit, actually shrinking a lot, and the question is, well, what should we do about it? And a number of the industry programs over the last 20 years or so has talked about student starts. Well, student starts are important, but what's really important are student completions.
Right.
Because if we don't turn people into pilots, they don't buy airplanes, they don't come to Sun and Fun, and
right.
so forth. So the emphasis has shifted a little bit from the quick hit of, yeah, we get somebody started on this business, and is now shifted into, well, what can we do to get them all the way through the training process? And that's not such an easy answer to address, but I think finally there's a dawning awareness amongst everybody, not just AOPA, but everybody across the board, that this is something that we collectively have to do. And the AOPA Foundation has been charged with facilitating all of this. We can't do it all by ourselves. It's not us trying to take control of all of this, but to work collaboratively with all the other groups, EAA, Sun and Fun, GAMA, NBAA, and so forth, to make sure that we're all bailing the boat out appropriately.
Right. Yeah, because, I mean, you hit it right there on the head. It's basically how many people we can get all the way through the program. And, you know, because I am a flight instructor, and of course, being an old timer, when I step into an airplane, it's all quality stuff. But you know, to get these kids, you know, not only involved in the flight training part, but also the safety aspect and the further on part of the, you know, what we do. And AOPA provides a lot of tools, you know, for us flight instructors to help get these guys through. And you know, and if you're a flight instructor out there listening to what we're talking about right now, there are a lot of good stuff. I mean, not only the courses are quality, you know, but AOPA has always provided mentorship for flight instructors. Hey, if you need guidance, you know, I don't care if it's a, you know, how do I do a pre-solo written test, to what endorsements need to be done for me to be legal to cover my, you know, myself. Yeah, you know, AOPA has always been there for these flight instructors to help get these guys completed.
Well, we've been in the flight instructor refresher clinic business since the inception of it. We were the first ones when the FAA said, we're going to turn this over to industry. AOPA was the first ones to get into the business, and we maintain probably the dominant position. And not only do we do the live courses, we continue to offer those, but we also have an online course that we do in partnership with Jeppesen. And I would modestly say that because we're not in it to make a profit, we put a lot more emphasis into keeping the quality of the programs up as best we can. Not only that, but we have a quarterly newsletter that we send out either electronically or in print to every flight instructor that's still active on the FAA list called CFI to CFI. Hopefully you are getting it at this point.
I am getting it.
And we're pretty proud of that, and we encourage people to submit ideas, and it's a vehicle to communicate. While we're talking about safety, I'd like to digress just a little bit because we had a little bit of weather come through Lakeland yesterday afternoon, as you may have noticed.
But you wouldn't know it by looking at what we have here. But,
oh, of course not. It's a beautiful day here in Lakeland. But anyway, yesterday afternoon, if you looked at the radar, there was a line of thunderstorms, and some of them severe, that was kind of coming down across the Florida Peninsula. And this was right around 5 o'clock when they opened up the airport after the air show. Well, the weather was just to the west. The winds had already picked up, and there was a lot of, let's call it marginal VFR, and in some cases you had instrument meteorological conditions.
Okay.
I was watching airplane after airplane launching out into this weather, and because you can't get an IFR clearance out of Lakeland, they were going VFR. And I got thinking to myself, you know, this would be a pretty tough environment under IFR. The ride is going to be terrible.
Sure.
Certainly for the first half an hour or so, depending upon any direction you go.
That's right. It's going to be bumpy.
It's going to be very bumpy and so forth. We've got some big thunderstorms out there. And all of these people are not only trying to avoid the weather, but you're up there with 150 of your closest friends all trying to go through the same holes you are. And I'm thinking, you know, where's the logic in all of this from a safety perspective? And what's the downside? If they'd waited half an hour to 45 minutes, the line would have gone through. It still would have been a rough ride.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't have had nearly the threat that you would have had. And this goes to the whole decision-making process. And as we talk about getting young pilots or older pilots into this mindset, let's look at the risk versus the reward.
Right.
So I found that just a fascinating observation of what's going on in the mindset of some of the people who are coming here who they love airplanes and they like flying, but, you know, as they say, an accident could ruin your whole day.
It sure can, and if, especially if it happens out here in the airport, because now you're on stage. Everybody in the world is seeing you out there. You know,
I have that happen with my landings regularly, so it's even worse with an accident.
That's right. It's not really worth pushing it just to get a little upgrade on your headset or something like, you know, whatever the deals they have here with these vendors, you know, and these guys push it to, I got to get a new engine, you know.
But they were already here, see, so they'd already gotten the deal, so you'd like
That's right.
To
well, I got to go
use,
mount the engine.
You've got to be able to use the headset after you've gotten it. So anyway, just there's going to be some weather here, I think, at Sun and Fun, not this morning, but later on today.
Right.
And we just like to encourage people to kind of think about the risk versus the reward.
Yeah, back when I learned how to fly, my instructor said, you know, as a private pilot, the most chanciest time you're ever going to have is when you and a bunch of friends are going to go see the Super Bowl and you got Super Bowl tickets, and the only contingent that you had was to fly. You had any other way of getting there, and you're standing there and it's marginal VFR and your friends are going, come on, you're a pilot, aren't you? You said we could do this, and then you know the peer pressure causes you to take off and something like that.
Well, one of the things I have to do a lot of public speaking around the country, and I generally try to fly myself as much as possible. I mean, you know, that's what it's all about, is using light airplanes. But you also have to take into account that even if you don't have the limitation, the airplane does. And so you have to say, okay, if I really have to get to where I'm going, do I have an alternative in mind?
Right.
And sometimes that may mean leaving a day earlier.
Right.
Sometimes it may mean going on the airlines or something like that. And I had an interesting experience. Had a safety program that I was doing with the University of North Dakota here this last fall. And took one look at the weather, and there was a very strong low-pressure system that was coming up, and said, well, this is not going to be suitable for flying a light airplane, so I'll go on the airlines. Well, the airlines cancel and delay flights because of weather, even with the equipment and the experience that they have. And I won't go through all of the trials and tribulations it took to get there, and then getting home was even more challenging. The point to be made is the pros recognize when it's time to punt.
Yeah.
Only amateurs rush in where fools fear to tread.
There you go. There you go. You guys do such a great job there. Now, how long have you been with AOPA now?
I started with AOPA and the Safety Foundation, back when it was called the Safety Foundation. In 1992. And I was the executive director at that point. And then this last year, 2 years ago, I became president of the Safety Foundation, which was just a title change. It didn't mean anything different. And then when they combined the two organizations, I became president of the AOPA Foundation. So that keeps me very busy. It was something interesting this morning we saw. We kind of keep a newspaper clipping service, or I guess an electronic clipping service these days. I'm showing my age here a bit. I saw a report that the state of New Hampshire was talking about the benefits of general aviation in their state. And just within the state of New Hampshire, GA generates over $600 million annually.
Wow.
To the state's bottom line in terms of money going back and forth, not just to the state, but it that much economic activity. And it employs over 8,000 people. Now, if that's not reason enough to try to help to improve the general aviation environment, I don't know what is.
Yeah.
So, and that's being, you know, not all the states have that kind of level of activity, but a lot of them do. Here in the state of Florida, this is a huge deal. We didn't have an airplane available, so I couldn't fly myself in this year. I typically do that. And I was flying in on one of the airlines, and the lady next to me lives here in Florida. And she says, oh, yeah, I know about Sun and Fun and the air show. And I asked her, you know, what was the economic impact? And she said, oh, that show brings in tens of millions of dollars to our city every year.
Oh, yeah.
It's wonderful, and we just absolutely support it.
And I know the people here in Lakeland love to host the show here, you know, because they've been doing it forever. Actually, I don't know how long they've been doing it here, because I've only been retired from the Army and been coming here for the past probably 16 years.
Yeah. I think it started sometime in the early 70s. I don't know if any – I'm sure some of your listeners will know that
go,
very
what?
Well.
They don't know. They don't know when it started. Come on, you know.
History is important, and we should learn from it.
But we love the volunteers that are listening to this, and they've been coming out here forever, you know, and helping the ground guide some of these airplanes and everything.
Well, speaking of volunteers, I'm glad you mentioned that. This is an easy interview, I tell you. But a couple of things. For the AOPA Foundation, a lot of people think that that's funded by the AOPA dues. It is not. We are totally self-funded, and we get most of our funds to do the safety seminars and all of the outreach things that we're doing, working now on image and preserving airports and growing the pilot population from largely individual contributions from pilots that are tax deductible. So there's an incentive right there. But we hope that people will, as they look at their financial circumstances, would say, yeah, I believe in what this is doing. It seems worthwhile, and so forth. And so we hope you'll support us in that regard financially. The other thing that you can do, in addition to financial support, is to volunteer. And that doesn't mean you have to necessarily be directly affiliated with us. But do you know what May 21st is?
It's my brother's birthday.
Besides that. I mean, everybody would know it's your brother's birthday, but besides that.
May 21st.
May 21st is International Learn to Fly Day. You knew that.
I knew that, yeah.
You knew that.
It's on my calendar.
Learn to Fly Day. So that's a great opportunity. Every airport in this country should be open and with open arms and bringing the public out to see. Now, some people are not going to be able or interested in learning to fly, but they at least ought to get exposed to it. But we need volunteers to go to the airports, and if they're pilots, maybe offer to take somebody on a flight. No steep turns, no stalls, none of that.
I agree with you there.
None of that fancy stuff. Just take them up on a nice, easy flight. If the winds are higher than about 15 knots, you probably want to think about taking first-timers up in a circumstance like that.
Right.
But you can do a lot to let people know what this is all about. And there's three things, I think, that go into somebody being a good candidate for a pilot. Three things. You can argue with me if you like.
I was going to say, maybe I'd like to hear them because, I do a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, well, you know, we're looking to get more people in as pilots, and if you want to have somebody who's really going to be a viable prospect, there are three things that I think are needed. There may be some others, but this is the top of the list. First off, they have to have at least some disposable income.
Right.
If your
financial
financial situation is that you're right up to here, then this probably isn't the time for you to start flying. Now, if you can reprogram some of your income so that you have more available for flying, that's great. But you need to have some disposable income. And you don't need to go just for private pilot. We now have sport pilot and recreational pilot, and let's get people started. Get them through sport pilot if they want. That gets them flying in light airplanes. We've got a whole new crop of LSA aircraft out there that are really wonderful machines. So that's the beginning point. And then if they want to go on to private and so forth, great, but let's get them started on that. So we need a modicum of disposable income. I'll arbitrarily say you'll need about $5,000 to $6,000 for a sport pilot, and you'll need probably double that if you want to go all the way to private. Okay, so that's number one.
I agree with you on those.
The next thing you need is you need to have some available amount of time. Okay, it takes time to learn. And I would say that if you don't have probably 6 to 8 hours a week, that's not all flying time, but 6 to 8 hours a week to sort of devote to flying, getting to and from the airport, doing home study, spending ground school time, and so on, you've got too many things going on in your life. So then you have to decide, do I have the ability to reprogram myself a little bit and take a little extra time so that I can really learn this and learn it well? So now we've got two things. We've got to have disposable income. We've got to have a certain amount of time that we can devote to this. The last one, which is a little harder to assess, the first two are pretty easy, but the last one that's a little harder to assess is a desire and an adventuresome spirit to learn this. There are a lot of people who would have the time and have the money, but they decide, this really isn't what I want to do. I'm not really comfortable with this environment, or it's too much work, or whatever. If we don't have all three, we're not going to have a really viable candidate. And as I wrote in one of the columns in the magazine that I am privileged to be able to do monthly, you can't vote somebody off the island. You can't sit back and cheer your favorite team and so forth. This is not a program for couch potatoes.
Right.
We're looking for players. And this isn't virtual. This is real. This is life at its best. So I think as we're talking to potential candidates on International Learn to Fly Day, we ought to lay all of that out to them and help them to understand. You're going to do something that less than a third of 1% of the population of this country can do. And is that elitist? No, I don't think so, but it is special.
It is.
It requires some ability and a real desire to want to do it. And so we shouldn't undersell it.
Right. And some other things that people need to understand, too, is that once you take off in an airplane, the time doesn't count. Your aging stops. So you can, if you want to live longer, learn to fly. Now, I do the same. I had to throw a little.
Boy, I like that.
Yeah. But, now I do the same thing. I own a helicopter and an airplane, and I live out on a little lake out here, and I frequently fly in and take my neighbors up for a helicopter ride, put them up in the seat. But I, all the time, I'm not really in it for the money. I don't need to be out there charging people, but guys will ask me all the time, hey, you own an airplane, can you take me flying? Because I'm thinking about learning to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the people that I know, they've got what you're talking about, the ingredients, they've got the income, a lot of them are, big wigs at certain companies, and they just want to,
Well, it can tremendously enhance the quality of life. Now, we're interested in both the quality and the quantity, which, of course, gets me back to safety. If you can make this very safe if you choose to, or you can make it very dangerous.
Oh, yeah.
And as we're talking to people, that's a question that always comes up is, how safe is it? I get asked that question regularly. And there's an easy answer. It's as safe as you choose to make it.
Right. And, a lot of the stuff that you're talking about when we're out here doing, these the intro flights and showing people how to fly, you made mention of, watch what you do. Just take them up and fly them around. People actually respect pilots as good pilots. just by watching you fly and not do the stuff that you need to do in an emergency, you know, just what they watch you take off, they watch you fly, they come back and say, hey, have you ever flown with Bruce Landsberg? He is a great pilot. They've never seen you do a steep turn. They've never seen you stall, you know, or slow flight.
That's probably a good thing.
Yeah, it is. That's right, because except for the flight review, it's the only time we really do it, right?
Well,
unless you're
not
teaching all the time.
I hope not. But,
all right.
Well, that's good.
Okay. Well, look. Well, Bruce, I really appreciate you coming up here and telling us all about it and everything.
Well, thank you.
Plug your website real quick, if you're not an AOPA member.
Why not?
And I can't. Yeah, I was going to say, I don't understand. Yeah, why you're not? Because all of us have been AOPA members forever. I've got the 10-year pin or the 15-year pin. I get them and stick them on my lanyard all the time.
40 years.
That's what you've got?
I got 40 years, as long as I've been a pilot. That doesn't need to be promoted outside of this small group here.
Okay.
But anyway, AOPA.org is AOPA's website. It's open to anybody. And then if you want to go for the safety side, go to the Air Safety Institute tab, and you'll be able to get access to all of our materials. They're open to everybody. And I would remind you that if you do have a little extra cash that you'd like to donate to a very good cause, please donate it to the AOPA Foundation.
Yeah, it's a very good cause. Bruce, I appreciate you coming here.
Rich, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Have a great day at Sun and Fun.
You too, sir.
Thank you.
You too. And go see their booth, guys. If you're out here at Sun and Fun, go see their booth over there.
Yeah, the big white tent.
Big white tent. I'm Rich Tiller for the FAA Production Studios here on top of the Fast Team National Resource Center in beautiful Lakeland Linda Regional Airport and Sun and Fun 2011. We'll see you next time.
We hope you've enjoyed today's Managing Safety, brought to you by the FAA Production Studios, a joint effort of the National Aviation Safety Foundation and the FAA Safety Team. Please visit our studio website at faaproductionstudios.com to hear past programs.